This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamoto, MPR. If you're a fan of MPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the kiwifruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
David Marshall, retired engine driver.
Jim Oliver, retired engine driver.
Bruce Markwell.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, now this is the second part of our recording, so you were going to start talking about working in the yards, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So what did that involve?
Well, whereabouts were these yards? I know, you know, Palmerston North, the rail has changed, and well, if you could just explain, to the locals, if
you go to the warehouse, the entire warehouse complex, including the car park, was the locomotive depot. That was where the old locomotive depot was, which bordered on West Street.
On Main Street and Church Street.
And the Church Street on one side and, of course, Main Street on the other side.
So the area that is now known as the railway land, that's where the station was? Did it extend into the square?
Went right up to the square.
It stopped at the square, where the City Council building is now. Mm. That's where it stopped,
Yeah, which would cause problems for the cars going around the square, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Well, the rail used to go right through, though. The main trunk used to go through there, didn't it?
It was a double line complex right through the centre of Main Street and Palmerston North.
Through the square.
And through the square, of course. And when you got to Terrace End, the lines diverged. One went to the left up to Bunnythorpe, and the other one went right to Wakaronga and Ashurst.
Mm-hmm. And off through the gorge then.
Yeah, and then through the gorge.
Now, were there safety barriers or anything then?
There were crossing lights in the square, but no safety barriers.
Okay, no. Yeah. And how fast would the trains go through the centre of town then?
6 miles per hour was the limit.
That was 10 kilometres
an hour.
10 kilometres an hour.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then once you got through the square, where the old post office is now, you could continue normal speed.
Okay.
Goods trains 30 miles an hour, passenger trains 50 miles an hour, and they used to do 50 miles an hour down Main Street.
Okay. But was it at that time there were several small stops so people could use the train for getting, say, from Foxton to... or intermediate stations to Palmerston North, or was that
before? Not really, no.
So earlier, I know early on there used to be those sort of things.
There used to be, south of Palmerston North, there was the Awapuni station.
Yeah.
The race trains used to stop, they'd let the passengers off, and then the train would come into Palmerston North and stay there for the day before returning to Wellington.
I know there was some people I recorded, they were saying they lived out in the country, and their father would drive them into town, but they'd stop just short of the town by the station so they could get on the train and have one stop going into town.
When I first got my fireman's ticket, I was straight out onto the shunts on a BB class locomotive. And
the shunts is just moving trains around the yard
and sorting out the wagons for various trains.
Yeah.
Trains would come in off the main trunk from Taiapi, Whanganui. Some of the wagons would be going to Wellington, some to Hawke's Bay, Wairarapa, and others would be staying in Palmerston North. And that was the purpose of the shunts, to sort all those wagons out for the various destinations.
Were you around at the time of that story about the wagon full of post holes that were there when it arrived?
Well, I was.
That was what I heard about.
I was there and I heard about it. He was a yard foreman, and I can't remember his name, but it was his last day, and he was a really nice old gentleman. And somebody said to him, look, they're missing an LA wagon of post holes. Could you see if you could find it? Well, he spent half the day looking for this wagon of post holes. Never found it, of course.
Yeah. A bit like skyhooks.
Yeah. Yeah, skyhooks. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, in the locomotive depot here, when I came here, there were 56 crews, possibly about 20 cleaners.
How large is a crew?
Two-man crew.
A fitting staff. And it was all men, I think.
No ladies in those days. They came later.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
And, much later. And the fitting staff, I suppose, be 20?
Yeah,
quite. It was a big depot, really. I mean, I was a country boy from Gisborne and Hawera, and I was gobsmacked when I came here at the size of the place.
Yeah.
Yeah, that it was such a big depot. It was awe-inspiring, I suppose you could say.
Yeah, well.
But you were talking about the put and take shift that we used to do. Every Sunday, they used to have a 3 to 11 light up. Used to light up a lot of locomotives ready for the week.
3 to 11.
3 to 11 in the afternoon.
From three o'clock to eleven at night. Yep.
And you used to have to light these locomotives up, and you can imagine the smoke. And if you got a good westerly wind, all of the west side of Church Street was invisible. You could not see a house. And how people ever lived there, I don't know. And you probably know those two-story buildings in Church Street. They're still there. They're painted a yellow colour. They used to get smoked every Sunday afternoon if the wind was blowing from the west.
How long would it take from lighting the fire for a train to be ready to go?
2 hours.
Depending how cold they were.
You know, because the boiler gets extremely cold, so you'd be starting really from scratch. But sometimes the water in the boiler would be quite warm, so it wouldn't take as long.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Okay.
It was a busy yard. It really was.
Yeah.
There were quite a few incidents happened. One that we were talking about the other day, Jim, was an engine driver by the name of Arthur Messiter. He was on what was called the North End shunt, which was a shunting leg by the City Council chambers where they are now. And he had this heavy rake of coal wagons, and he went up the back shunt with these wagons, and when he put the brake on, he couldn't stop. And he finished up, he pushed the stop block out into the square, and the locomotive was actually
sitting on top of it.
On top of
the stop block, that's the thing at the end of the line.
Big concrete block.
Yeah.
Big concrete block.
And they were sitting out on the square.
Yeah.
And we had another driver who did exactly the same thing, a married chap by the name of Tower Wells. He did the same thing, but he was pretty annoyed because he never broke Arthur's record. Arthur pushed the stop block out 27 feet 8 inches, and Tao only did 25 feet.
Okay. Now, I know that the old American steam trains, they all had a cattle thing at the front.
The cow catcher.
Yeah. Did you have anything like that, or did you have any problems with it? Yep. That was normal, was it? On the steam train?
Yeah, the shunt engines here in the locomotive and Palmerston North had one both on the front of the engine and at the rear of the tender too.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they had a ledge probably 6 inches wide at the base of them, on the front edge, where the shunters used to stand.
Okay.
You can imagine us seeing that now, couldn't you?
Stand at the front of the train as
they were there waving them through.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay. And there was a standard fine, and I'm not too sure how much it was, but if you went back on the North End shunt to the depot with a bent cow catcher with the nose of the bent was bent up, there was a standard fine. You'd been got too close to the concrete block.
Because at the end of this line where the concrete block was a water tower, and used to fill the shunt engines up from this water tower.
I think it was about £2 or £5.
Oh, I can't remember now. £2 seemed to be the standard fine.
Yeah, I think it was about.
It was quite a bit of money.
It was actually.
Well, my first week's pay was £7.13 and something.
Well, you were lucky. I started at 1 and 11 halfpenny an hour.
Well, mine was 4 shillings and a farthing.
Oh, listen to Yeah. Capitalist.
Yeah. 4 shillings and a farthing per hour. Yeah. That's what it started on.
But the prices were a bit different then. Yeah.
Definitely.
But, you know, the yard was, it was a very congested yard. It was a very small yard.
Yeah.
And in that yard you had probably about 18 mines with wagons in them. You also had a car and wagon...
18 what?
Lines.
Oh, yeah. Lines. Lines.
Yeah.
And you had a car and wagon depot at one part of it.
Right in the middle of it.
And that was in the middle of it. And, of course, when the yard was built in the 1890s or whenever it was, they didn't have the traffic that they had in the 50s when we're talking about. So they really, sometimes we'd come down off the main trunk, down Main Street, and we'd be held up at Albert Street. There was a set of lights there to stop you, or Ruahini Street.
So you had to give way to the other trains or to
the
cars?
Because the yard was so congested you couldn't get into the yard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes you would sit there for 2 hours before you could get into the yard.
So what was the situation for cars then? They had to always give way for trains?
Well, there was signals there. As soon as we got a light to move off, the lights would start flashing.
So it was good reason for moving the lines out up
for Milsom. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
To a certain extent.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, that was started in 1930, wasn't it? The Milsom deviation. And then, of course, they had the Depression, and then, of course, after that, the Second World War, and put everything on the back shelf.
So when you say it was, you mean it wasn't actually functioning, but they started preparing it.
In 1930 it was started.
Yeah.
But
trains weren't going there.
No, there was nothing there. They were starting to build the yard when the Worldwide Depression occurred. So they had to shelve it.
Yeah. But, there was a huge amount of dirt moved for the present Milsom Yard, as we called it in those days.
Yeah. Mm.
Okay. What would be some of the highlights, if you like, of your time in the yards in Palmerston North? Because it was a Queen's visit or something, was it? Royal visit came through?
That was before my time.
Before your time?
Yeah, that was 53, wasn't it?
Yeah. Probably.
Yeah, it was 53.
Well before mine.
Yeah.
One of the stories, we were working on the North End shunt one night, and we had a bit of an oopsie with a cattle wagon and took the door out of it. Mm-hmm. And they used to have 9 black bullocks per wagon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they got a bit more than excited. They came out of that wagon faster than the shutters could move.
Yeah.
And at 1:30 in the morning, where do you find big black bullocks? They're from way out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
In the dark.
Mm.
They were all the same colour.
Yeah.
And that's why I asked you about Hugh.
Oh. Did he have street lighting then?
A certain amount of it, but it was nowhere near as good as it was today.
they had light towers.
It was fairly good.
Yeah,
but the bullocks went in 9 different directions, and they were in Church Street. That's where they more or less finished up, and there was a set of stockyards on the corner of Church and West Street behind the depot.
Right. Yeah.
Well, it took us about 2.5 to 3 hours to round up all these 9 bullocks.
Mm-hmm.
We had half of the city council workers out,
mm-hmm.
quite a bit of the railway staff,
mm-hmm.
and I happened to be in Church Street helping to find them, and one had popped out of nowhere. I don't know where he'd come from, but he'd stopped in the middle of Church Street, and our senior sub-foreman, Fritter, as we call him, Hugh, had turned up in his car going home after a few extra ales, and he
said, "What are we stopped for?" Drinks,
that was normal.
What year was this roughly?
Or? About 1962, 63.
Okay.
Yeah. I think the police found 2 of them up in the square. These bullocks.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them had gone down side streets. Some had gone back into the railway yards, and just as I was stopped here to warn him to be very careful, one of the bullocks appeared from somewhere. I didn't see him coming, and he stopped and he looked at the headlights of Hugh's car, and started to pour, lowered his head and started to paw the ground. And I says, don't even think about moving you. He sobered up so fast. I've never seen anybody sober up so quick. All he could see was his black shape with a pair of white eyes.
And
that was it.
Yeah.
But we did round them up, get them down to the stockyards and stuck them in another where they were supposed to go.
Okay.
But the police were out with all their rifles ready to shoot them if they started to get a bit more than awkward.
They used to have a what they used to call a rotten row in the loco depot. And in anything that was due for repair and they never had the material for it would get stored in there. And
Were they fixed mainly in Palmerston North, or they go, Wanganui a major? So where would repairs normally be done?
Mostly in the hut shops.
The
major repairs were in the hut shops.
Okay.
The local stuff was done up here. And they'd have these locomotives stored in what they call Rotten Row. And the shed driver, he was in charge of the cleaners and the staff around in the yard and in the loco depot. He couldn't find them one day. There was about 10 of them supposed to be working, just new recruits. Looked everywhere for them, couldn't find them. And somebody said, if you have a look in the tender of that KA on Rotten Row, you might get a surprise. So he climbs up on the tender, opens the lid. And there they are all in there, playing cards by the light of gas torches.
Yes. The next question I'll ask you, Dave, is, did you ever see the washout boiler working?
Yes,
Well, it wasn't. I don't think I ever remember
it
would have been working before I started.
It used to be a high-pressure washout boiler. They used to wash out
cleaning out the boilers, scale and stuff.
Did you have to climb inside those? Or
The labourers did. They climbed inside the fireboxes and renewed the fire bars and stuff like that. I did it once in Gisborne, and
it's not the most pleasant place
to be. Not the most pleasant place if you're claustrophobic.
Forget it.
How large would they be?
Well, about the hole would be about that big, maybe.
You got a hole about 60 centimetres wide.
You'd be scraping your shoulders when you went in.
And you had to sometimes put in one arm and slide your shoulder through.
I only did it once. I couldn't do it again.
I was similar.
We had a chap in Gisborne did that by the name of Len Olson, one of the cleaners there that took my place. He got in the firebox and panicked and couldn't get out, and they had to hose him in the firebox to cool him down to get him out there.
Panicked. Once you're in, is it sort of opened up, or you still feel closed in and cramped? Quite small.
No, it's just a big square box, The KA was 48 square feet. It was quite a big firebox, even so, it's claustrophobic.
Could you stand up in it, or were you basically...
No, you'd be sort of like, you'd be like that.
It was about...
You'd be sort of crouching a wee bit.
Around about 5 feet high.
Yeah.
You know, 1 point meters. Yeah.
Yeah. They used to have what they called a truss store in the depot. These new cleaners used to start work, and they used to have them on, and they'd say to the cleaner, would you go to the truss store and get me a long weight? Because the store staff knew what the story was. This young guy would go into the truss store and he'd say, could I have a long wait, please? He said, just a moment, and he disappeared. So he finally woke up. Another one was a...
left-handed screwdriver.
We never had that one. But another one was a smoke box key, you know. They never had smoke box keys. The driver sent me to get a smoke box key. Oh, just a moment. And another one, there was a funnel drill. They had a big long steel rod about 10 feet long. And they'd send him to... the driver sent me for a funnel drill. Oh, just a moment. They give him this piece of steel that probably weighed about 50 pounds or more, and he'd lug this thing back to the driver and say, here's the funnel drill. No such thing. They have all that kind of stuff.
If I can just come back to the engines one little bit, then the transition from steam to diesel electric. Were you involved with that? And,
absolutely. Oh, yes,
and how did you find it? And what were the benefits apart from obviously the size of the steam engines?
Well, you're out of the weather for one thing.
Right.
Yep.
But when they first, the DAs particularly, when they first came into service, they were very, very snug locomotives, lovely seats, and drivers were inclined to doze off. Quite a dangerous setup, and then they had to install vigilance devices that went off about every so often, what, about 60 seconds or something.
Yes.
And you'd have to press it to cancel it. But prior to that, it was really dangerous. Yep. There was one driver, Bert Flynn from Paikokoriki. He went from Otaki to Paikokoriki, never put a tablet out. You know how they used to put tablets out and that stuff.
Sections. So the tablets, it's so there aren't two It'll trains take you from on a line.
Yeah, that's right. You'd have the Otaki.
There's a tablet by the side, and you take it.
Yep.
You got to have the tablet to go down the line.
That's right.
The other end, you drop it off.
Yeah, you put it on the top of the exchanger and picked up the other one. So he went through Otaki, never put the tablet out. Went through Tihoro, nothing. Waikanae, Paraparam, and they finally put him down the back shunt in Paikokoriki and derailed the train because he'd have gone straight through.
Oh,
okay. And so that really set the alarm bells going.
Yes.
Because you're just sitting in the warmth, you know, after years of being on a steam locomotive. So that was the danger that they had for them for a while.
That was mainly on long distance, though, wasn't it?
And on night shift.
Right.
You know, because it's not natural for the human body to be awake at night, is it?
Yeah.
Right. So it was really a bad thing for a while.
Were they easier to manipulate around the yards and that sort of thing?
They were excellent. Really good. Yeah. There was no problem with them. I mean, with a steam locomotive, there'd be steam and all kinds of stuff, you know, particularly in a busy yard.
But there's the term sort of the romance of steam. Do you feel it was a bit duller when you went on to diesel electric?
Well, it wasn't the same. There was no challenge to it.
No.
You know, you were like a bus driver, virtually, you know, stop and start. You know.
An overgrown, as I'll say, an overgrown truck driver.
Yeah, that's basically what it was, you know. Yeah, you're quite right, Jim.
But, well,
what about the status since, young kids, the idea, you want to be a train driver when it was steam.
That waned to a certain extent. You know, I mean, I can remember coming down the track from St John's Church in Fielding, you know, down towards the Fielding Railway, and kids would be... They get off their bike in the days of steam, and they'd watch you go past, and they'd wave to you.
Yes.
Mm.
But in the days of the diesel electric, you weren't even there.
No.
You weren't even there. You know,
it was totally different.
Oh, absolutely.
But from the train driving skills, your trains with steam would be 500-600 tons, fairly close to maximum loads.
Mm.
Diesels came in. 1,000 tons was normal. And that is when your train handling skills had to come into play, because you've got this movement. You had quite a bit more power than the diesel, and built up quite a bit quicker than the steamer. And the guards at the rear of the trains would very quickly tell you if you didn't get it right. Because they would get some jolts and yanks and everything else you wouldn't believe sometimes.
Spill their beer.
Did it ever.
Yeah, because I think if you could just explain the makeup, you know, nowadays they don't have guard vans anymore, or wagons or whatever you like.
Well, funnily enough, the guard was in charge.
So what's changed in all of this to where we are today?
Well, it was just different skills required to handle the bigger trains. And I was involved with a set two with an engineer in Auckland probably only about 20 years ago. I'd gone up on Silverfern rail car from Hamilton. I was due to bring a freight train back. We're due, a different driver and myself, we're booked to run a special into Rotorua and back about 2 weeks ahead. And he says, you'll have to come and learn to handle a particular type of brake valve, because he says, you won't remember how to use it. I says, if I can't remember how to use that brake, I said, I shouldn't be driving trains.
Mm-hmm.
And I explained to him that we used to handle trains of 280 tonnes out of Taihape every Saturday, and Dave will confirm that. Two trains would come into Taihape on a Saturday and it'd get leave as one.
Mm-hmm.
They're both 640 tonnes on the average. And that was the only brake we had. Well, he panicked and said, no, you would never have done those trains with that type of brake. I said, well, it was the only type of brake we had. I said, so what else were we to use? And he was speechless.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, that's what I learned to drive trains with.
Mm.
And if I've forgotten how to do that, I shouldn't be here now.
Mm.
It's as simple as that. Mm. That was the skills that we had to learn. Mm. Handling different type of brake systems.
Yeah.
Different sized trains.
Mm.
And faster.
Yeah.
And that's quite interesting. I was called into a primary school one day to give a talk. And a lot of the young children there were having problems with mathematics and reading skills.
Mm-hmm.
And the teacher got on to me and says, well, can you bring something in so that they realise that they're going to have to learn these sort of things? So I took in a whole pile of loading lists, old ones, for trains.
Mm-hmm.
And a train list consists of a complete list of every wagon that's on that train and its weight.
Yeah.
And by a quick glance, once you've been at it for a while, you can see very quickly that it's pretty close to correct. You've got a fairly good idea of what you've got to drive.
Yeah.
That particular day, some of the questions they came up with, one of them was, what is the biggest train you've handled or driven? I said, the longest one is 1,180 metres.
Mm-hmm.
And the heaviest one is 2,500 tonne. Well, that did set them back. And to relate to the length, it was the Taunui school, just outside Fielding. And I says, from your school here, out there, the tail end would be down at the Bunnythorpe Crossing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the length of the train.
Mm-hmm.
I said, exactly.
Yeah.
And that got to them. I says, and for goodness sake, do not get on the track when there's a train coming.
Yeah.
Because
we
can't stop.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, because they do emphasise problems of trains trying to stop. Did either of you have any incidents at all, or, you know, or near misses or anything?
Near misses? Oh. How many did we want?
Well, I had one
you
fatal
see,
just before I retired.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had this fatal, actually I was a crew supervisor, I wasn't the driver, but I was on the train and we were going on the Endeavour Express, the Napier train that was, got to Hillcrest Road, which is just this side of Ashurst, and saw this Falcon station wagon coming towards us from the direction of the gorge, and he turned right in front of us, and hit him, took him up the track about 200 metres, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And I went out, the crew wouldn't get out, and I had to go back and have a look, and of course he was deceased.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that got me was that he retired from the hospital on Friday and died on Monday. That was his retirement.
Mm.
I've never got over that, you know. Mm. Never got over
it. Was a doctor, or?
A doctor? No, I think he was an office worker. I think he was an office worker. I'm not too sure now, but that was the only fatal I ever had. But I've had had a few near misses, I can tell you that.
Tell me about it.
One of the funny ones I had was when I was driving, going down what they call the Takapau Bank, quite a steep gradient. And somehow or another, I wasn't watching what I was doing, and I missed an outer speed board was telling that there was a 15K restriction over a small bridge at the bottom of the bank.
And well, an out of speed
out of speed board. It's a warning. 400 meters from.
Oh, okay. Just saying that at some stage in the future.
Yeah, so 400 meters further on.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
No, that's all right.
And came round the corner, I suddenly realised the fireman called. He said, "Oh," he said, there's a jigger on the bridge," he said, "and there's guys working on the bridge." And I slapped the anchor on and with the brakes on, and went over this bridge at about 45k, and there was a 6 kilometre an hour restriction on it. They were replacing the sleepers on the bridge, and all these guys jumped off the bridge into this swampy water with the green stuff in the water, and I didn't know what to do. Anyway, I kept going, stopped at Takapau, and I explained to train control what had happened, and he said, "Oh, well," he said, "as long as nobody was hurt, blah blah."
Yeah.
So anyway, I finished work that day, and the boss said they left me a note to say, "In the morning, would you go and see the locomotive supervisor?" And I knew what it was going to be about, this particular incident. And when I walked into his office at 8 o'clock in the morning, this scowling bridge inspector was sitting in there, and I knew what the story was. And I said, "Well, you know, well, what happened?" I explained. I said, I apologised profusely. I found that's a great way out of things, is to apologise profusely.
Yes.
And anyway, the other guy calmed down, the boss man from the bridge outfit, and he said, "Well," he said, as long as he said that, you realise what you did." I said, "Oh, I do. I absolutely do."
I didn't say you have to pay for the cleaning bill.
Well, the jigger, you could have used it as firewood.
Because
they just jumped off it. But anyway, I got away with that one.
Yeah.
Got a severe reprimand, as I used to get in the olden days.
This is part 2 of 4. Tune in next week for part 3.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
NPR wants to hear from you, the listener. How can we improve your experience? What are we doing well? What can we do better? Head to npr.nz and click on the Listener Survey button to be taken to a short series of questions that will help us do better. You'll also go in the draw to win a $50 Cafe Royale voucher. That's npr.nz, or find the link on our Facebook page.
Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.